BBC Six Music Podcasts.
Six Music.
This is a free download from the BBC.
Find out more at bbc.co.uk/sixmusic.
And now, Adam and Joe.
Joe.
Pair of Ponces produced podcast.
Joe.
Lizard saved from prison of Weestix.
Joe.
Incredibles save from smartphone dropping in. Pool of Wii. It's a Wii-based program this week.
Joe.
There you go. That's the news at 10 theme.
You did keep things in the toilet area this week, Count Buckley's.
Did I? Well, I mean, what apart from the smartphone, what else?
That's a good question. There was something else toilet-based.
I mean, there's always something toilet-based.
Seemed a little...
That's true. But not two-in-one show.
Maybe you're right. Our listeners, you'll have to listen carefully and see how much toilet-based chit-chat there is from Buckley's.
I maintain that the lavatorial area is a great leveller. It's something that we human beings can all relate to. Everyone hangs out there. I know that not everyone wants to talk about it.
It's a bit vulgar.
It's a little bit vulgar.
It's a bit vulgar.
Are there not more...
Are you the sort of person that has little sort of jokes in your loo?
Yeah.
Those little joke placards that you can pop up on the wall in your loo?
Yeah.
Do you have little books of Daily Mail cartoons next to your loo?
I do, the Spectator cartoons, yes.
The Spectator cartoons?
Yeah, they're very clever, some of them.
You're like a very amicable robot.
Yeah, I am, that's true.
A jolly robot.
No, I've got like all sorts of books like that, you know.
Really?
I do most of my reading in the lavatory.
Do you?
Sure I do.
You've got a little pile of books next to the toilet.
Yeah. I've got some Philip Larkin poems there.
Really?
Collected Philip Larkin. I've got the Viz letterbox book with all their funny letters in there.
Yeah.
I've got Frank Zappa's autobiography. I've got a bit of Nabokov on the go.
Do you not have any mags?
Yes, sure, I've got
mine. Do you find when you pick up a mag, you find yourself rereading the same page over and over again?
Mm.
I've got a copy of SFX magazine in there at the moment. I know a lot about a box set of Doctor Who that I have no interest in.
Is that because it just opens on that page?
It tends to, yeah.
Man, it doesn't bother me. You know me. I've got.
Man, it doesn't bother me.
Man, it doesn't bother me none. Because I got magazines from way, way back. And I keep them. And I this week I was reading me a magazine from 2005. A copy of Word.
That's history.
That's history, baby. But I love it. Because without a knowledge of history, you are doomed to repeat your lunches. And that's very true, Dad.
So here's a letter from Jack Kelly, aged 14. Who claims that he could be the youngest mega fan of the show.
14?
No. I doubt it, Jack.
No.
But still, you are a noble and brilliant fellow for sending us the following email.
Yeah.
Dear Adam and Joe, I have in the past been called an Adam and Joe super geek. But I noticed in the latest podcast, 9411, that it said that we were listening to Podmax. However, in the last series, there was a similar longer jingle saying when Podmax would change its name. The date for the first change has definitely passed, and I believe it is now called Chatmax. I may be wrong, but due to the enormity of my Adam and Joe podcast collection, it would be impossible for me to double check. But you surely could, and then correct the jingle to avoid it grating on my ears or the ears of any other super ponces who overindulge in your ramblings.
What is the name of that super ponce?
Jack Kelly. So he's saying that it should now be called Chatmax,
Jack,
not Podmax.
Jack, I was sat in... Hey, Jack, I was sat in my shack listening to the podcast last week, and I thought exactly the same thing as you. And you know why that happened? Because our regular producer, James, was away. And if James had been on the case, that would never have happened. James knows that the rebranding took place months ago. And
so it was an anomaly.
It was an anomaly caused by Apples, who was producing that week. Apples didn't know. He hadn't received the memo. He didn't realize that Podmax was now called
Benny
Chat
the
Max.
Apple's Apple Yard.
Yeah.
Benny. Hey, Benny, what are you doing?
Benny, why with the logo, with the jingle here? You got the wrong jingle in the pot, in the Chat Max.
Yeah, Benny. He was a good kid. Too bad. Yeah.
He was a good kid, but he was a punk. He was a punk for putting the Podmax jingle in the Chatmax podcast.
Dumb bums we ain't.
Dumb bums
we ain't.
That's how it goes on the Adam and Joe podcast show, radio show.
Yeah, so thanks for that. We agree and we appreciate it. Anyway, listen, we got the actual...
It's very earthy, this program, isn't it? Killing and toilets. Mm-hmm. It's very earthy.
Elemental.
Elemental, yeah.
Yeah, that's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, here it is in all its elemental glory. And don't forget the next episode of the Lizard in the Blizzard jingle.
It's coming up.
It's coming up.
That's exciting.
Stay tuned for that during the podcast. Here we go!
Are you ready for the Adam and Joe podcast? Made with little nuggets from their radio show. Mildly amusing mini moments from the past. Beautifully preserved in super stereo. 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 Everybody likes it, from your sister to your mother.
I was in the railway station earlier this week, right?
Have you ever spent most of your time in the railway station or on trains?
I absolutely love it. Have you ever been to a railway station?
A couple of times in the past, yeah.
Yeah, they're brills. And it was big in the railway station. That's it. No, I was standing there waiting for my train and I saw a guy on the concourse drop a twopenny piece on the floor, right? Just fell out of his pocket. So I looked at it and I thought, oh, that's 2p.
A 2p piece?
Yeah.
They're quite rare these days, aren't they?
Tuppence
pieces? Yeah, no. You don't get them around so much. Take it from Cornballs.
Cornballs? He's trying to have them phased out. A 2p piece? I'm trying to ban it!
It already sounds archaic and medieval. A 2p piece.
A 2p bit fell from his pocket onto the concourse. Anyway, so I saw the 2p fall on the... Is that more groovy?
Yeah.
2p. So I saw 2p fall out of his pocket on the concourse. And I thought, I'm not going to tell him. I'm not going to bother to say.
Excuse me, it's a lot of money.
You dropped your 2p because I thought he's going to look at me like, what? Oh, yeah, all right, thanks. Because it's just 2p. But then as I was thinking that, I was thinking, that's not the right attitude. We're in a financial crisis. You know, 2p, all the 2p's count up. It's all about 2p's at the end of the day, right?
Yeah.
So I thought... Yeah, I mean, what kind of attitude is that? Just to leave the...
What kind of attitude is that?
What kind of attitude is that? Just to leave the toupee on the concourse? That's not right. So I thought, I'm going to pick it up. Because by that time, the guy had gone. But then I thought, I can't pick it up because someone might have seen me watching him drop it. And then if I pick it up, it's going to look like I was just waiting for him to go away so I could pick up the 2p. Steal it off him, thinking, yes, he's dropped 2p and he hasn't realised. Now it will be my 2p in my pocket for sweets or whatever.
This is like co-presenting a show with a tramp. If you were a vagrant and you came in every Saturday and told me the stories of your week, they'd be like this. Coveting a tuppenny piece.
So I saw it on the crowd. I was thinking, well, he doesn't want it. I'll have it.
You could equally tell the same story about a third eaten burger in a bin.
Yeah, but a real vagrant wouldn't worry about what people were thinking.
You would make a good vagrant. That's the thing.
That's the thing. I am.
You've got the beard.
I feel as if I have the soul of a vagrant, but then also I have superficially, you know, a superficial level of respectability and. Mm. You know, I'm integrated into society in a superficially regular way. Like, I have a family and stuff like
that. Hey, we're all vagrants in a way.
Well, exactly. You know, nothing against the vagrant community.
No.
But what, it took me a while.
So what happened in the end? Did you get the tuppence piece?
Yeah, I picked it up.
You picked it up? You still got it? Or have you spent it?
But I had to go through a little bit of theatre when I picked it up. Like, looking around for the guy. Oh, he's gone. Oh, sir, you're... Your tuppence bit. I have it. If anyone's... I tell you what, I'll go and announce it.
Ladies and gentlemen, tuppenny bit has been found on the concourse by a short vagrant. If you've lost it, please come and collect it from the information desk.
I think it reflects well on you, though. You really... it doesn't matter to you that it was just tuppence. It was still the man's property.
It was the man's property.
And you were still guilty about thieving it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that reflects well on you. Well done.
Thanks very much.
You're a tramp with a heart of gold. Maybe if a woman kissed you, you'd turn into a log. Not a frog. A log.
I like to listen to Adam and Joe. But I listen to the podcast, not the live show. I used to feel acute frustration because I couldn't join in with Text the Nation. But now my troubles have disappeared because Retro Text the Nation's here.
And now my letter might be read out instead of thrown in the bin and forgotten about.
So, last week on Text the Nation, we were talking about birthday flip-outs. And here are some of the messages that we've had during the week on the subject. Here's one from Anouk. And she says, "Hello, Adam and Joe. I don't have many birthday memories, as I never really celebrated them. But there's one I still remember. It was my 8th birthday, and only 2 months before, we'd moved from a big city to a tiny village. I didn't know anyone at my new school, so my father let me invite a bunch of kids over to the cinema and McD's."
What's this voice you're doing?
This is Anouk's voice.
Okay.
"First of all, the film I wanted to see was sold out. So we ended up seeing Richie Rich with Macaulay Culkin, who I thought was rather annoying. Then my school friends, in inverted commas, kept talking through all of the film and threw popcorn at each other and angered the other people in the room who did want to see the film. I felt embarrassed and left out, so I just tried to ignore them. Then we went to Mickey D's for Happy Meals, and it was the same. Loud shouting, throwing food and running around. I just ended up sitting at another table, alone with my father, looking at these kids I clearly didn't understand and had to spend at least another 4 years with at school. My dad just gave me a sympathetic look and said, 'Oh well, we tried, we failed. Just stay at home next year then.' I've never had a birthday party since, but that's fine with me."
Sounds like Lench Poofar.
Anouk. Anouk might be Lench's long-lost daughter. "I can sympathise with you."
What a moving story.
Yeah, it is moving though, isn't it? She can't relate to the other kids. Anouk's probably like a... I'd be interested to know what you do for a living, Anouk. I bet you're some kind of nuclear physicist or...
Yes, something very sophisticated.
A geneticist.
At a remove from everybody else.
Mm. Or, you know, just way ahead in whatever field she's currently operating in. You know, even if she's...
She's probably paid by a major conglomerate just to stay out of things.
Mm-hmm.
By the government, just to keep out of things.
Because she's the cutting edge is too cutting.
Yeah, because she can't. She's too bright.
Right. If she works at Tesco's or whatever on the checkout, she'd
make
get fired because
bad.
Her checkout stylings are way in advance of anything that they can handle currently.
She can do two full trolleys in under 20 seconds.
Exactly. And she's scanning things with her eyes, and she can feel the barcodes just with her fingertips and things like that.
Here's one from Jesse. "On my 12th birthday, I had to accompany my elder sister to a sexual health clinic. The woman at reception asked who wanted to be seen. I said, 'I'm 12. My sister went in to be seen. I didn't realise that she had told a rather loud nurse that it was my birthday and made the entire sexual health clinic waiting room sing me happy birthday and try to hug me. Everyone thought I was a patient and looked sorry for me as I was alone. My sister turned out to be fine, but I'm still angry. Is that a nice way to celebrate your birthday, to have everyone in the waiting room of a sexual health clinic sing you happy birthday and try and hug you?
Yeah.
Thinking that you're a patient age 12.
A diseased happy birthday.
Another quick one from Liz in Derby. "On my 6th birthday, my parents had built me a throne by covering a large chair in tin foil so I could sit at the head of the table amongst my friends. But they made a fatal error of starting the happy birthday song when the lights were on. I tried to stop them, but everyone was singing by now, so the only thing I could do was rip up the throne to shreds like a demon."
Oh, that's
from
dangerous
Liz
as well, isn't it?
Building ripping up thrones.
No, making a big foil throne like that.
Why is that dangerous?
Because you can be struck by lightning.
Indoors?
Yes, the lightning will go through and be conducted through the throne.
But imagine ripping up your throne in a tantrum. Mm. That's the worst tantrum of all, isn't it?
Yeah, especially after they spent all that time, like, constructing the
yeah,
throne.
Well
but
done,
it is dangerous. It's like it conducts...
Six.
I heard of someone... there was a band or something who covered themselves with tin foil on stage, and one of them nearly got fatally electrocuted.
Yeah, outdoors.
No, in a venue.
Really?
Yeah. By
really?
A cable lying around.
Well, it conducts electricity.
Exactly, that's my point.
Ah, band tin foil.
Here's one from Pete in Hersham in Surrey. "Hi, Adam and Joe. I went to Chessington World of Adventures on my 11th birthday with a group of friends. We got to the front of the queue of my favourite ride, the Magic Carpet, and they had raised the minimum height threshold. Being the shortest of my group, I had to wait by the side with my mum. The tables have turned now, though, because I can still buy children's clothes without the VAT. I'm 25.
Nice one. I wonder what happened for them to raise the minimum height requirement.
They saw him coming. Quick, it's Pete. Oh, no, you have to be a couple of inches taller, mate. Sorry
Poor
about
Pete.
That. Yeah, why? Do you think, like, someone nearly flew out of the...
Yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's no good, is it?
So he's got to think himself lucky he wasn't the last guy on before they raised the height requirement.
Ooh, it's terrifying. We went on some roller coasters recently, me and my family, and my son Frank wanted to go on, but he's only just tall enough to get on these things, and I was so frightened he was just going to fly out. It really wasn't that much fun at all.
Riding. It can be very scary. Mm. Yes. Here's one from a household that sounds insane. Mm-hmm. Sam Wistanoff. This came from, when I was around 5 or 6, my parents, who disapproved of things like ice cream and jelly due to being hippies, decided that all the food at my party should be healthy, natural and brown.
Quite right.
So they called it the Brown Party. My friends were disappointed and the party wasn't going very well. So to liven things up, I stood on a chair and took my clothes off.
Nice.
I was carried away crying. The Brown Party.
That's a good party, though, isn't it? The Brown Party, and then you've got a little nude girl being carried away, crying.
Yeah, it could be a boy. We don't know. Sam Winter. You could, listeners, please give us your gender.
Yeah.
There's too many gender-ambiguous names going around. This was an email from... Uh-oh. I don't think I've put the name down. Uh-oh. We'll have to come back to this another time and say the name. But here's the email. My brother was having his 5th birthday party at our house. My mum had recently totally redecorated. 10 very excited boys were haring around, and our Labrador, Jimmy, was really enjoying himself and joining in. Little do you got to imagine Jimmy. The fun, the screaming, the excited cries of children having fun. To cut down on the mayhem, my mum put Jimmy in the garden, but he howled so much she let him in again. As he came in, the back door swung shut and clipped the tip of his tail clean off. Completely oblivious and happy to be back at the party, Jimmy ran round and round the house, wagging his tail vigorously, spraying blood all over the newly painted walls and party food, while the kids moved to the next level of hysteria. I'm 23 now, but the story of my 15th birthday has become a legend in my family and still makes me cringe.
Oh, it's just revolting.
That's horrific.
Stumpy Jimmy, and he was okay, though.
Jimmy's fine. Everybody involved in the story is fine, despite its grand guignol trappings.
The Adam and Joe podcast is once again changing its name. From June of 2010, it will be known as Chatmax. Then in February 2012, Chatmax will change its name to Conversatia. Then 2 months later to Inspiron. Then to Podmax Classic within the week. However, for official business, conversation and reference, it will be known throughout as The Adam and Joe Podcast.
Hey, listen, here's the thing. I was watching a film during the week called The Ghost. The Ghostwriter, you know, with Ewan McGregor.
Sure.
Playing the guy that ghostwrites the Prime Minister, a thinly veiled Tony Blair.
Roman Polanski.
Yeah, directed by Polanski, starring Brosnan.
Pierce Brosnan.
In a magnificent performance.
As Tony Blair.
As Tony Blair. But there was a weird thing about the film. They kept mentioning sandwiches.
Did they?
Yeah, would you play the first clip? I don't, you know, I'm not sure this means anything. And I don't, I'm just getting it off my chest, really. But it just seemed odd to me that they would mention sandwiches all the time. Here's the first clip of sandwiches.
You have 6 hours before Adam gets in from New York. Can you finish by then?
I'll try.
I'll ask Deb to bring you up a sandwich for lunch.
Thanks.
Perfectly innocent. Just bring you up a sandwich for lunch.
Yeah,
fine.
Everyone likes sandwiches.
10 minutes later, this happens.
How's it going?
Pretty well. He keeps calling me man.
He always does that when he can't remember someone's name. There are sandwiches in the kitchen.
And that stuck out to me. Oh, this is weird. What's the deal with sandwiches? I mean, it's not as if it's set in like an airport departure lounge where there are lots of sandwiches in the immediate environment.
Well, it's a metaphorical motif that Polanski's
Is it, though? And then later in the film, that you get this.
Something to eat?
What have you got?
Club sandwich, lamb chowder.
Chowder will be fine.
So he doesn't go for the sandwich, but it's the third mention of sandwiches in the film.
Well, I think it is deliberate.
So I was looking through the screenplay, as you do, and weirdly, the first mention of sandwiches is on page 17. The second is on page 27. The third is on page 47 of the screenplay. And then later in the screenplay, there's a whole scene where the stage directions talk about sandwiches, even though they're not actually mentioned.
This was your week.
In the film.
Your sandwich conspiracy.
You know
theory.
What? This wasn't just the week. This was last year. And I made a note of this.
Yeah.
And then I've come back to it and I've recorded all the mentions of sandwiches. And now I'm playing them to the nation. Because I think this is the beginning of an amazing conspiracy theory.
Do you?
Part of the plot of the film is that hidden in the Prime Minister's memoirs is a secret code, right? Mm-hmm. That gives away some... That's the plot of the film, right? That gives away some misdeed he did in his highly fictional illegal war.
Right.
And I think maybe there's a similar code hidden within the film based on sandwiches.
Was there a code? I forgot about that part of the film.
Yeah, I think so.
I was focused on Ewan McGregor's accents getting around all over.
Yeah, there's lots of fun in that film. Lots of fun to be, inadvertent fun to be had.
Yeah.
but what do you think about that? My sandwich I mean, conspiracy
it's,
theory.
It's literally jaw-dropping. but don't you think that maybe there's a chance that it is a metaphor?
For what?
Well, in the film, he is sandwiched between the two powerful and opposing forces of Tony Blair, or the Tony Blair character, and the Cherie Blair character.
Yes.
And their independent agendas.
Or it's set in a house in New England, isn't it? On the coast. Maybe it's in Sandwich.
Right.
That's a place on the coast of America, isn't it?
I don't know.
Yeah, it is. Anyway, I'm just throwing that out there.
That's interesting. I wonder if people have got their own theories about conspiracy theories in other films that they've noticed, you know.
It's unusual, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't use just any old word whenever you want in a film.
You know,
if you're
going to
use a word three times, it's got to mean something.
Sure.
Like sandwich.
Yes. Then it begins to stick out, certainly.
Listen, let's leave that there.
Ooh.
I'm a funny person. I often make up jokes. My jokes are more amusing than those of other folks. When you hear my joke, I think you'll find that you agree. Come on, you're all invited to a made-up joke party.
I like that jingle because it's got an atmosphere of despondency to it.
Yeah, it's despondency in the face of hilarity.
Yeah.
Or the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a joke that I made up. Actually, it was a joint effort with Garth Jennings.
Really?
He came up with it.
Because I was thinking the jokes that my made-up jokes that I said in the first show after we came back, I thought maybe they were so bad that I'd set the bar very low.
Train Mama from the Throw.
And released some sort of, released some sort of sediment from the bottom of the tank.
Some joke stink.
Yeah.
I think that the made-up jokes we've had so far in the last couple
of weeks. Or maybe there were some listeners that would,
I could do that!
I could do better than that.
Oh, if it's like that, I could do that! I didn't realise.
I think that's what happened.
I thought it was funny jokes, but it's not.
I think that's what I did. I lowered the bar so low that the bottom's fallen out of the barrel.
Okay, well, you might think that that's...
Are you going to raise it lower?
I don't know.
What? Lower it higher?
I might
what?
Do a little lower raise. Here's one that Garth and myself came up with. Garth conceived this. I did a tweak on it.
Wow.
Have you
did
heard?
You get together just to do this?
Yeah, we had a meeting.
You had a meeting.
Have you heard, in LA we had it, have you heard that Jonathan Ross's uncle was an East End villain who was notorious for pulling people's pants up to their ears? He was called Wedgie Quay.
Wow.
It was very expensive to get out to LA for that meeting as well.
The problem, oh, his uncle.
His uncle.
Yeah, but so his surname isn't Ross. But you've unified the whole thing just by doing the weak R's on the...
Exactly.
On both.
Yeah.
That's
was my
good.
Idea.
That's very good.
That was the extra layer that I added.
That was the extra layer? Yeah. What was it like without that layer?
Originally, it was just about an East End villain who pulled people's pants up to their ears. He was called Wedgie Cray. And then I said, hey, we are missing a whole layer here.
I think you've ruined it.
What?
I think it's better without the layer.
I mean, it's very lazy to talk about Jonathan Ross's speech impediment, which is anyway not that pronounced. Everyone does it. But I thought, I'll do that too. See?
That's good. Is that it?
Yes.
That's very good.
Go on then.
That's one from a listener. Yeah. This is really good though. And I did the Google test on this.
Yeah.
And it passed the Google test. It's from Henry St. Ledger, an illustrator and animator. So already I like him.
Mm.
Here's his joke. Me and my friend John came up with this one. Patient. Vet. My parrots are stuck together. Vet. I'm sorry, I don't understand. It's too confusing.
Too confusing.
It's too confusing.
Toucans are fusing.
That's quite good, isn't it?
Hey!
And that's, I thought, well, surely that's been done before.
Yeah.
But I Googled it and no.
That's brilliant.
I Googled toucan fusing.
You get a hey, hey, hey!
Wow, that's the greatest accolade of all.
Rather than a... Which I think Wedgie Quay got.
Adam's really great and he's wonderful. Joe is really, really, really brilliant.
They're fantastic.
But which one is the best? It's Adam.
Let's have a jingle. This was constructed by Jez Price. Let's hear it.
That is good. That's very good.
That's robotic, futuristic. I like it.
Yeah. Do you think Jez's real name is Jeremy? And he gets his friend to call him Jez. Because it makes him a little bit cooler.
Jeremiah?
Because my name's Joe. Could I be the Jozza? The J-man Jozza?
You wouldn't want to be the Jozza, though.
Why not?
Who wants to be the Jozza?
It's just more exciting. You put Zs onto something, it's immediately more exciting. You used to be called Ads.
Ads?
Ads with a Z.
Ads is cool. Ads bads.
What about Joz?
Joz is not cool. Joz sounds rubbish. Sorry, man. But you've got loads of good names.
That's true. I've got too many names already.
Jay Korn.
Jezza. Well done, Jez Price. That was amazing.
Joz. I don't ever want to call you Joz.
You've been made angry by that.
I'm not angry. I just don't want to call you Joz. You're not a Joz.
So listen, what's the text the nation?
Joz stick.
Tell Jozza what the text the nation is.
Jozzles. Well, I want to talk this week, ladies and gentlemen, and I want you to interact with us about arguments that you've witnessed between couples, maybe, between friends. But you're in the room and you see the argument kicking off.
Tricky
right?
situation.
Mm.
You're with a couple of friends and they start argumentalizing.
You know, it happens, obviously, with married couples and couples that are together in a relationship after a few years. They get comfortable with each other and they start getting to that phase where they can freely argue.
Become overly conversationally relaxed.
Yeah, and once you've got friends who've been married for a few years, the incidence of these little disagreements increases.
Part of the fun.
But it's part of the fun. And usually, it's, you know, I'm not talking about horrible, horrible, violent arguments and stuff. I'm talking about fun arguments. Just little disagreements. Hopefully, it's not the early stages of the couple actually splitting up.
Yeah.
But sometimes it is. And what do you do in those situations? Like, what do you do, Joe, if someone starts arguing in front? Because both you and I would say, are not that good with confrontation, right?
We both tend to get quite physically violent quite fast. We take it onto a physical level. But no, you have a good thing that you used to do when we were with groups of friends and there'd be an argument. And you used to just pipe up, oh, Mum, Dad, stop arguing. As if you were a child and the two arguing people were your parents.
That's right. Mummy, Daddy, please don't fight.
That's a good line, and it immediately introduces a bit of, a bit of fun into the equation.
Yes. A guy I used to work with, Johnny, used to say that when he was
But you know
writer.
What? Yeah. That was when we were younglings.
Yeah.
Now you are a mummy and
right.
a daddy.
Now I'm dealing with real mummies and daddies.
So what are you going to do about that? What do you do now?
Just
tell us
it.
Your story. You encountered an argument?
Well, there was a mummy and daddy staying with us the other day around at our place, and we were all having a nice afternoon, sat around the table after lunch, a couple of glasses of wine. And
dangerous territory already.
I'll call this couple Tommy and Tina.
Yes.
And Tina suddenly piped up. We were talking about things like watching box sets. I was complaining about the fact that I'd run out of good.
Terrific convo.
It's a great convo.
Great convo. Some of the Sunday mags do columns on that. You could make reference to one of those.
I knew you would pour a little scorn bucket on my box set combo.
Great combo.
Cornish gets out his scorn bucket, fills the scorn bucket to the brim.
There is a column in a paper that goes, it's called My Favorite New Box Set or something.
Is there?
Yeah.
I don't read that column.
I'll cut it out for you.
I just have the conversation for real. Okay. So we're having the box set convo, and it's going fine. You know, we've had the Lady Gaga convo, and and then we do the box set convo, and then Tina pipes up, hey, you know a great show that I've just got into that I was really quite surprised by, but it's brilliant, really well made, brilliantly acted, and really surprising. Great stories every week.
Watchdog.
No, Jonathan Creek.
Right.
So she goes, Jonathan Creek. And what was the other guy's name I said?
Tommy. Tina.
Right. So Tommy goes, what? Jonathan Creek? Are you joking?
Oh, bad start, Tommy. Too much, too strong.
Yeah, and he's genuinely outraged, but he's also embarrassed because he thinks that Tina's, you know, perfectly understandable love of a program that many people
She's
enjoy.
Lowered their cultural stock.
Yeah, he is embarrassed that she likes Jonathan Creek.
Right.
Totally unfair, incidentally. I've never seen The Creek, but I imagine it's brilliant and it's very popular.
And she's announced it in front of Buckles and Lady Buckley's. Yeah.
He thinks we're going to draw some kind of conclusion about her just because she loves Alan Davis and his
You've known Tommy and
sleuthing.
Tina for years, though.
Yeah. And I could see, I knew that Tommy was really embarrassed about the fact. And he was like, and he had his head in his hands and he was going, oh, Jonathan Creek, what? When do you watch it? You don't really like it. And she's like, yes, it's really good. It's great. You're a snob. It's like, I'm not a snob. It's just, Jonathan Creek, oh.
So it sounds like this accelerated very quickly, very sudden.
Yeah, and then everyone went quiet because it was clear that he was genuinely distressed.
Were the children around the table?
No, they were all...
they'd gone off to play.
...hurting each other outside, yeah. And it got a little uncomfortable because clearly he was genuinely embarrassed and angry with her for revealing this. She was like, what? What's the problem? She's quite nice about it. She didn't get too chippy, but after a while she did. She started sort of saying, oh, why don't you just leave me alone and stuff like that? So... I think I tried the Mummy Daddy Please Don't Fight.
It didn't work.
It didn't really work. It was still a little uncomfortable.
So how were you feeling during all of this?
Well, I was chuckling a little bit. I was having a bit of a chuckle. But then I also, you know, you also...
What was your beautiful wife doing? Maybe clearing the table, busying herself, pretending to ignore it?
Yeah, I think so. Dealing with the dishes, fussing in the kitchen. She was reading Grazia.
Right.
And
So the Text the Nation subject is how do you handle like stories about arguments yourself in the middle.
Right. I'm interested in the arguments. I'm also interested in the techniques for dealing with them, maybe like conflict resolution perhaps.
The text number is 64046. The email is adamandjoe.sixmusic@bbc.co.uk. And you know, Sunday afternoons after lunch with a bit of wine, that's perfect argument territory.
Yeah.
A lot of listeners, you can look forward to maybe having an argument tomorrow afternoon.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we had, as I mentioned...
Maybe plan the very provocative... And it should be about something very trivial. Jonathan mm-hmm. Creek's perfect.
Yeah.
Because it's totally innocuous.
Yeah.
What does it matter? So it's the perfect subject to have a huge, destructive Barney about.
Yeah, because, as I said, we'd already exhausted Lady Gaga.
Right.
And it was all about, like, the merit of Lady Gaga. I was defending Gaga, but that got very heated.
Well, let's not get into Gaga.
No, all right, then.
Oh, this is classic. Check this out. It's classic, man. Oh, no. This is so classic. Yeah, look at that. It's classic. Sort of.
Here's a clip from last week's show of me talking about a video I'd seen online of the Kings of Leon. We played one of their tracks, and this is what I said afterwards. There's a weird video of them on YouTube playing at Reading a few years back where apparently they just hacked off. They're having a bad gig. And they just play like an incredibly bad version of one of their songs deliberately and just sort of playing weird notes all over the place and singing out of tune.
That's cool.
At first I watched it and I couldn't figure out if someone had dubbed over it to make it sound deliberately bad or if it was them just being weird themselves. It's quite perplexing. So I never actually said last week whether I had decided. All I said was that I was a little bit confused.
I think you were suckered hook, line and sinker.
I was.
By Les Mitchell's son.
That's right. Well, there was an avalanche of communication saying, Buxton, you idiot hole! It's a shred video! And, of course, I've seen shredding videos before. The first time I was aware of them was a few years back when there was a chap called Santeri Ojala, also calling himself Saint Sanders, who did some amazing videos of people like Stevie Vai... And like guitar virtuosos, and he would deliberately, you know, he would dub deliberately.
Now you're just showing off your knowledge of shred videos.
Well, I wanted to make
try and get a little bit of stuff in the bank.
Yes, of course.
A bit of padding around
had seen
you for
them
when
before.
You take the punch.
I'm trying to set up the fact that I was...
So how come you fell for this one?
Because it's amazingly well done. But anyway, to explain the shredding thing, it's people dubbing deliberately bad versions... musical versions of songs that are being played live in a video, right? And so this Kings of Leon one I saw, but I was confused because the sound, like the guy's voice, is exactly like the lead singer. Here's a clip of the shredded version of this Kings of Leon performance playing Sex on Fire.
But you realise that that probably is him singing?
No, it's not him singing. This is all...
Are you sure?
...constructed, yeah.
Are you sure?
Listen.
No, but it could be they played the shredded stuff in a different key. You never know. Are you 100% sure?
Yes. Now I am. Hope I'm not putting my foot in it again. That is not the lead singer of the Kings of Leon.
If he'd knocked all the accompaniment out of key, it would make all his singing that previously sounded in key out of key. It's just a theory. I think it could be a real stem of the real singer, but he's knocked all the backing stuff out of key.
No, I don't think so. I think it's completely constructed from scratch. The guy can tell me. Anyway, his dad, Les Mitchell, as you said, he was one of the people that emailed. He said, "Hi, Adam and Joe, I was listening to your program on Saturday. Had to laugh when you spoke about Kings of Leon being hacked off at the Reading Festival and playing badly. The playing was all done by my son, Tom Mitchell, 24. He's a creative sound engineer from Perth, Scotland. He does shred videos where he dubs over funny versions of live performances of various bands. Check them out. He's done Coldplay, Sigur Rós, Radiohead." There's a very funny Radiohead one. "Fallout Boy, Mars Volta. I can assure you my son does all the instruments and records it on his Mac computer. Check out his site on YouTube." He calls himself Allergo Noise on YouTube. And they're amazing. And I think he does the singing as well. I might be wrong, but Les or Tom, you could get in touch and let us know if you do the vocals. But that's the thing that fooled me on the Kings of Leon one, was the vocal. I just thought, well, that is just the guy from Kings of Leon. And then I went online and I searched for a review of that Reading gig, and I found out that the reviews were all quite mixed as well. They were sort of saying they played a weird show and they left the stage early and they were obviously having a bad time and they got a bit angry with the crowd for not being enthusiastic enough. So it all kind of made sense. I thought, wow, this is a real performance of them throwing this gig. But it wasn't. I was suckered in by a brilliant bit of shredding there.
What's his name? Tom?
Tom Mitchell.
Tom, you fooled Count Buckley's.
Enough respect.
Which is very, very, very difficult to do. Very difficult.
Very difficult. I've so seldom been fooled by anything. And usually all my facts are absolutely on the money about almost everything I talk about. I'm one of the most well-informed men on the radio.
Text the Nation. Text, text, text. Text the Nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the Nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
So Text the Nation this week, listeners, is all about arguments you've found yourself in the midst of. Like if you're at a social engagement or out in the world and suddenly you find the people you're with or people close to you having a huge barney. Mm. How do you deal with it? Here's one from Dan Baker in Walthamstow. He says, "Whenever I'm at a dinner party or social situation, if it gets a bit heated after an argument or discussion, which happens a lot as we're all film nerds, I wait for a beat of awkward silence, then I play the opening to Marvin Gaye's Let's Get It On. This diffuses any situation and results in either hilarious laughter or confused looks. And either results in stopping the argument or a return to normal civility."
Hmm. You wait till you're married, it won't work then.
Well, he shares this method with his fiancée, Sarah, and his friend Dave Simpson.
His fiancée? It might work on your fiancée. Once you've been married for 10 years, then you try singing Let's Get It On during an argument.
He doesn't sing it, he puts it on. Oh, just to completely alter the mood.
He sticks it on.
Is that a good tactic? I mean, what record could you have put on during Tommy and Tina's altercation? Maybe the theme from Jonathan Creek.
Yeah. What is the theme from Jonathan Creek?
Jonathan Creek, what's he looking at this week? Investigating Jonathan Creek.
So based on a farm, I think.
Jonathan Creek.
Here's one from Amy, who's a girl. Amy girl. And she's in the pacifist black squadron.
Oh, yes.
No killings.
No killings. Good.
Yeah. My parents are starting to go deaf, so sometimes when they argue these days, they have to ask me what the other person said. I use this opportunity to rephrase their insults in a friendly way, and it seems to work. That's pretty good, isn't it?
She's the Kofi Annan.
There's hope for the future. Eventually, the arguing individuals will start going deaf.
What? What? What did you say?
But then what if you get a rotten mediator?
Right, who wants to stoke the fires.
Mm.
That'd be bad.
What was her name again?
Amy. Amy Girl.
Amy Girl.
Yeah.
Well, Amy Girl, I wish you'd come around to our house. I've got the same sort of problem with my parents.
And here's another one. This is from somebody anonymous. "Once, when I was about 8 or 9, my parents were arguing in the lounge. So I took the keys to my dad's Ford Granada, got in and started the engine. My parents came running out, stopped arguing with each other and yelled at me instead. Successful conflict resolution."
Nice.
So that's a way, if I mean, you wouldn't want to encourage that for children. You don't want to go starting cars, obviously. That would be a very bad thing for the castle to encourage.
Yeah.
But in this one isolated incident in the past where no one can be harmed, that was wicked. A very good tactic. Don't you think?
Yeah, that's excellent.
Here's another one, finally, for this little segment. Larry from Didcot, who is a male. This is very good, people telling us their gender.
Larry Mann.
We like to know where we stand.
Yeah. It should be like they do in Iceland. You know, you're either Stevenson
right.
or Goodman's daughter.
Right.
You know, so we'll
daughter.
Just... Dottir.
Dottir. That's fun.
Goodmanson or daughter. Well, why don't we do it with that?
Oh, Goodmanson. This may not be... What do you mean, why don't we do it with that?
What's his name?
His name is Larry from Didcot, brackets
so
male.
So you call him Larryson.
Larryson.
And if it's a girl, you call him Tina Dottir.
Dottir. I like that. I prefer the Dottir.
Dottir.
This may not be a completely relevant example, as I did not know the couple in question. In a popular supermarket, I witnessed a couple attempting to choose a loaf of bread on the appropriate aisle. The woman was dithering, overcome possibly by the large number of brands on offer. This led to the brilliant comment from the man, "Oh, come on, love, it's not rocket surgery." That's a bit of a, what do we call them? Malapropism as well.
Yeah.
You know, what did we used to do those on this show? Do you remember in the past?
Mm.
People who've got things confused.
Oh, eggcorns.
Yeah, that's a bit of an eggcorn as well.
A little bit.
There we go. So let us know about your argument handling tactics.
Don't forget to tell us if you're a bruthir or a dothir.
The email is adamandjoe.6music@bbc.co.uk.
In a self-constructed peepee cell sits a frozen lizard, when suddenly from nowhere comes comedian Eddie Izzard. He smashes through the wee-wee bars and tries to warm the lizard up by playing him his favorite CD of Kenny G. Kenny G Licks, Kenny G Licks. Ed is our employing Kenny G Licks to thaw the frozen body of the jingle making lizard. He needs the healing power of the jazzy Kenny G Licks.
Wow, the plot thickens.
Yeah, so I it's mean, a last minute reprieve for the lizard who was nearly dead. Having been trapped by his own...
Wee-wee sticks. And here comes Izzard with a Kenny G CD.
Yeah, I mean, you're supposed to pronounce it Izzard, but I was a little bendy with the pronunciation.
Okay. That's okay. And so the Kenny G, the lizard loves the Kenny G.
Everyone loves Kenny G.
He's starting to groove around.
Smooth jazz warms you up. It's
body
a well-known medical
increases.
Fact.
Body temperature increases. Air around him gets hotter. The wee sticks start to thaw.
The vibration from Kenny G's massive horn starts to warm the little...
lizard.
The little, what are they called?
Reptile.
Reptile. And it's difficult because he's cold-blooded naturally. And you know, I was thinking that maybe it was a double helix, double mm-hmm. helix. Mm-hmm.
Save that for next time, maybe.
DNA
What's
thing.
The scale we're dealing with here?
How do you mean?
I mean, how is the lizard a normal scale lizard? And is Izzard the normal scale Izzard?
Yes, I would say standard. It's a large lizard. It's like a large...
it's a big lizard.
It's like a Gila monster.
A what?
It's like a Gila, Gila monster.
So it's very big. How tall?
It's not tall. I mean, it's low to the ground.
Low to the
you mean
ground.
If you held it up, if it balanced on its tail?
No, I mean how tall? How high off the ground?
How high
it,
off the ground?
I mean, a couple of feet?
No.
No.
It's not like a
it
crocodile.
It could be a giant lizard.
It's not. No, it's a small Gila monster.
Give me a measurement.
I would say 10 inches off the ground.
10 inches. So Izzard is having to bend over. Or
maybe
kneel,
not that
kneel,
much.
Izzard is kneeling down.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fascinating. It's a fragile... It's a fragile... If he knocked the wee stick prison with his knee.
He smashed them to pieces.
Did he?
He had to get in there to the guy.
No.
To administer the
really?
Kenny G. Oh, yeah.
It's gripping. I can't wait for next week's instalment.
Yeah, well, there may or may not be some involvement from Mr. Neelix. From Star Trek Voyager.
That's exciting.
I'm getting desperate.
Now, last week on the podcast, listeners, we were talking about tantrums at birthdays, right?
Yeah.
And we had one that involved a little boy, I think, who was aged 6 or 7 and who wasn't allowed any E-numbers, any brightly coloured sugary food. And when someone gave him some Smarties, he threw a brick through a patio window and shouted, "Smarties make me naughty!" Didn't he?
That was his excuse.
Yeah. And we got to say thank you to Sarah Kelly, who sent us in lovely Smarties Make Me Naughty badges, which I think, by wearing them, give us permission to do anything.
Yeah,
right?
That's true. I don't know what the manufacturers of Smarties would have to say about that, but that's good, man. Yeah,
they'd probably approve as long as it stayed within legal activities.
As long as you weren't chucking bricks through windows on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And then claiming that as your defence.
But thank you, Sarah. They're beautifully made badges and we're very grateful.
Your Honour, my client maintains that Smarties make him naughty. Not guilty.
Okay, let's get back to the podcast. We'll be back with you for one last link at the end. Mmm, something to look forward to there, then.
Made up jokes, made up jokes, made up jokes party.
Yes, it's time for a few more made-up jokes here on the programme. Just to remind you, these have been specially authored by Ha Ha Architects, who have sent them in, and they believe them to be their own work exclusively. You can't just nick someone else's joke and pass it off as your own. And also, you can't do like a really obvious one that obviously other people would have made. We gave some examples earlier in the show. Anything to do with denial and various Harry Potter-based jokes.
Mascarpone.
Mascarpone.
I'm worried about made-up jokes.
Are you?
I think they're taking over. I think they're like one of those vines or trees that Tim people Vine. Complain about. It's like the Tim Vine. It's growing all over the house and we can't see out the windows anymore.
It's running rampant.
It's coming indoors.
I love
taking
made-up
over the show.
Jokes. It's my favourite. We should just rename this show Made-Up Jokes.
Do you think?
Made-Up Jokes with Adam and Joe.
Oh, my God.
Here's one from Joe. Hey, Jim Morrison. I've got a fine selection of cheeses here. Which ones would you like? Camembert Brie White Cheshire.
Well, I didn't even understand that.
Camembert Brie White Cheshire. Because that's an unusually creative cheese one.
I don't understand it at all.
Camembert Brie White Cheshire.
Oh, I see, I see, I see. Okay.
The types of cheeses.
No, that's pretty good.
And Jim Morrison is
that's
singing.
That's pretty edgy.
Come on, baby, light my
yeah,
fire.
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't
Camembert Brie White Cheshire.
No, that's good. I take it all back. That's good. That's very convoluted.
Thank you, Joe.
Now, this one isn't... This is one you've given to me.
Yeah.
You're having to fuel my made-up joke pyre. And it's not very clearly laid out. I'm not sure how to deliver this. It's from Stuart in Bristol. Dear Adam and Joe, did you know that it's Rick Astley's wife's birthday tomorrow? I wonder if she's going to get him that Pixar DVD he keeps asking for. No, I wonder if she's going to get that Pixar DVD she keeps asking for. I'm making a right pig's ear of this, aren't I?
And at the end he says, I would say not.
Somehow, I doubt it.
Right.
And the joke is headed, never going to give you up.
That's my heading that I put for my own.
Oh, you read it properly then.
She wants the Pixar. She wants up.
You get it. Everybody get it. We've given you the ingredients.
He's saying, I'm never going to give you up.
It's like one
I'm
of those magazines where you
cars.
Click the parts.
I'm never going to give you Finding Nemo either.
There you go. There you go. You've thought about it. I just got handed it to me.
Oh. I'm never going to give you Monsters, Inc. I'm never going to give...
That's good. That's good. That's good.
Here's one. From Steve Moore. I walked past a hairy-footed little man yesterday who was going to throw bread at me. I said, don't, Frodo.
Yes.
Don't, Frodo.
That's good, that's
don't
good.
Don't throw dough. Don't, Frodo. Don't.
You've given me the really bad ones.
Yeah, I did.
Graham and Tariq. You've put these big headings at the top.
Well, don't read the headings. That's to remind
me. Well, you've
got to
tell me that. This morning, the strangest thing happened. I got out of bed. I'm not laughing at the joke. I got out of bed and started walking around the flat, making small talk with various pieces of furniture. Turns out, on my alarm, I'd pressed the schmooze button. Schmoozing the furniture.
He pressed the schmooze button.
It's good, it's good, it's good.
Making small talk.
Kiss hug, kiss hug from Graham and Tariq. Thanks, guys.
Tariq. Here's one from Matt Hodson. What does Popeye have for breakfast?
Egg, 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 egg.
James liked that one.
Of course he did. Because it's very good.
Do you think that's made up?
Egg, 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 egg.
Do you think that's made up?
Sure it is.
Have you tested it?
Egg, 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 egg.
Put in egg, 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 egg on the computer then, if you want.
It won't work.
Here's one more from me.
Written by you or chosen?
Chosen by me.
From the stinky
this
bag.
This is from Matt Horner in Auckland in New Zealand. So I should... Actually, you should read it out in your New Zealand
mate,
accent.
I do a very good New Zealand
oh,
accent.
Mate.
And the thing about it is it's totally distinct from my Australian accent.
Because it's more sibilant.
No, I've worked out exactly what the difference is. Hobbits.
And there's a little bit at the top there where he's just explaining about the Hobbits. Creation of the joke. And then Hobbits. The bit in italics is the joke. Do you understand the system?
Yes. Right. Dear Adam and Joe, I have a joke which I made up during dinner with some friends some 7 years ago.
Hobbits?
Hobbits. As you can imagine, my joke was widely well received. So I spent the next 7 years refining the joke to a point I was truly happy with it. Enjoy.
Hobbits.
Colon. Hobbits. Pop in your hobbit house. Customer. Waiter. Waiter. Could I have some more of these small, sweet-tasting onions? Waiter. Sorry, sir. Oh. That's Charlotte.
I mean, yes!
We've had that before.
Have we?
I mean, that's one of the classics.
Not with that brilliant setup, though. I felt like I was in the restaurant. I'm going to get some, small sweet-tasting onions. No, says the waiter. That's Charlotte.
Thank you. Matt Horner, Auckland, New Zealand.
Hobbits.
Hobbits.
Oh, mate, I'm going to fly to England to find Adam and Joe. They are my favourite pair of Brits. I love their super podcast and the accents that they die. My plan is to get drunk with them and punch them in the tits.
Text the Nation this week is all about being in the middle of arguments that are nothing to do with you, but yet you're kind of trapped in there, and tactics for defusing them. Here is one from Tom Garrison. Arguments, colon. I'm a big proponent of the whoa, man,
guys
technique. Like, whoa, guys, it's only a muffin. Or whatever trivial thing the couple happen to be arguing about. This isn't muffin specific. The problems are if they don't think it's so trivial and argue with your patronising ways, or the whole argument made you feel uncomfortable or awkward, so your attempt at perspective makes it sound like you fear the end of the world if they don't stop. That said, it usually works showing them how silly it all is. Mm. Hey, guys, come on, chill out.
That doesn't work on Dr. Buckles.
Doesn't it?
No, because when I hear people doing that voice, I think, what? Why are you doing the calm down voice?
It's diminishing the
argument. I'm not calm! Why are you doing the calm down voice?
What would that have done if you'd done that during Tommy and Tina's big argument?
Hey, guys. Yeah, because then you make it into...
I think it fans the flames. It's
exactly.
Like blowing gently on a,
it's,
on
it's
a
like
fire.
It's like saying, whoa, there's a conflict. You're embarrassing yourselves. Hey, whoa, calm down. What?
Yeah.
Jonathan Creek!
You're exacerbating.
You're insane!
Hey, Cornbot and Buckzilla. A good technique when you are at a couple's house and they argue is to call the house phone from your mobile and mute the call. Do this a few times and the couple unite over bloody prank callers. Works most times. That's crafty. From Shane Greville. What? Mandangle. Oh, yeah.
He's a man.
I'm not reading that.
Shane Grevelson.
Yeah, Shane. He's a man. He's a man's man. But that's a good technique, to call the house phone during the argument to distract them.
Is it?
Because, yeah.
Well, then you feel you're being stalked by a terrifying phone freak.
Yeah, but it distracts them. So it's all right. It's better than them hurting each other.
I suppose.
Finally, is this finally? No, semi-finally. My coupley group of friends once squeezed down the front of a Daft Punk gig. Everyone was packed in and hot, and personal space was restricted to between your ears. A very good friend of mine was and continues to be in a volatile relationship. I like friends who continue to be in volatile relationships. They found it the ideal opportunity to have a stand-up row. Finger pointing and screaming, the works. Whoa. It felt rather surreal as I couldn't hear a word over the music, and as I danced to robot rock, I watched the crowd manage to create a 6-foot clear no-go zone around them, and despite the lack of room. I got them a turbo shandy each to distract them, and they're still together.
Ah, good job.
That's a good play. Like, if you choose your location properly, you can argue as much as you want. A Daft Punk gig.
Also, couples who...
It's perfect.
Yeah, couples who are able to vocalise in that way.
For some couples, it's the hallmark of their relationship.
And it's but it's a healthy thing sometimes.
Yeah.
There's a great Jonathan Richman song called Couples Must Fight.
Yes.
All about, you know, it's a way of blowing off steam, and it keeps the relationship lively. The bad thing is to have simmering resentment and contempt. You don't want that.
Don't want simmering resentment, really?
No, you don't want it to simmer.
How long can something simmer before it comes to the boil or boils away?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, it could be a few months.
Stuff simmering for 20 or 30 years.
That's not good. You've got to let that stuff out.
Oh, it'll be done soon. It'll be delicious.
Ouch! Podcast! Crazy sexy fun coming out of my computer down my headphones. Two ideas, two guys from England just talking about things. Oh my gosh, what's the point of all this stuff? I don't know.
So earlier this week, I was in a public lavatory where I spend a lot of my time. And I was just finishing a number one when I fumbled my smartphone, which I was sort of holding in my teeth. I think I was gripping it between my teeth, ill-advised. Splash. In it goes at the end of the number two execution. Number one execution. That makes a big difference in the story because I plunged my hand in immediately and rescued the popular brand of smartphone from the wee-wee pool.
An urinal?
No, it wasn't an urinal. It was sploshed right in the bowl there.
Right. That's a relief.
Yeah. But man, I just thought, oh, this is not good. And there was a split second where I thought, I mean, it's probably dead now, isn't it? In the wee-wee pond. Probably just leave it there. But then I thought, no, I'm going to save you. I'm going to save you, popular brand of smartphone. And I plunged my hand in there and ripped it out and shook it vigorously. Spraying.
Wow.
Spraying wee everywhere.
And that must have felt quite an adventure.
It was, man.
It was like a sort of, it's like the modern equivalent of one of those knight's tales.
I mean, I know this is reinforcing now the image of me as a kind of
foraging
tramp
through toilet bowls, picking up coppers on station platforms.
I'm like a tramp with a life.
It's good.
Of a successful man.
It's good.
With the trappings of success, but I'm actually a tramp. But it worked, man.
Yeah.
It was amazing. What an amazing feeling. And it reminded me of a time when I was little and my parents had given me a color TV for my birthday. I must have been about 12 or something.
Wow.
And it was amazing. It was a little Sony Trinitron. And it was just extraordinary. I was sat there one Friday night and I was watching Auf Wiedersehen Pet, followed by Magnum P.I. And I had a box of French fancies and I was digging in there and stuffing them in my little.
What are French fancies?
You don't know. They're the little square cakes, the pink. And the yellow and the brown ones. And they've got a dollop of...
A little stripes on them.
Icing and, yeah, delicious.
Yeah.
So I'm...
Yeah, delicious. Yeah,
that's delicious. So I'm playing through the French fancies. But I've got a glass of water on the top of the telly. Reach for the glass of water, knock it over, falls down the back of the Trinitron. And there's an actual fizz. And a puff of smoke, and the screen goes dark. And that's it for the Trinitron. And I can't begin to explain to you the feeling of pure heartbreak and loss. I mean, because when you're 12 and you're completely materialistically minded, it's like losing, you know, a loved one to see something like that happen. Your beautiful, amazing present that you never, ever thought you were going to get off your parents. You know, the last thing in the world I thought they were going to buy me was a telly after all the times they'd come in and say, "Are you watching telly? Turn that off. Do something proper. Read a book."
Do you remember when I borrowed your video camera and I tried in a speedboat in Greece and I wanted to do a Superman flying just over the tips of the waves shot.
Yeah.
So I held it very close to the surface of the seawater while the speedboat was speeding along. And it got splooshed, didn't it?
It did get splooshed.
And the seawater got in it, didn't it?
And it stopped working.
And it stopped working. Because water, if you spill water on something, you're fine. And like on a keyboard, because usually you just dry it out.
And as I found...
And it evaporates.
Urine.
And urine. Urine.
Urine.
But not seawater. No, no, no. That has a salty sediment once it evaporates.
And that gets
that
into
corrodes
the circuits. And
the circuits,
yeah. But my Trinitron survived.
No.
Yeah, I came...
Well, that's what I mean. If it's just water, the advice is just to obviously unplug, very dangerous, but then just let it dry out naturally and it'll usually be okay.
Yeah.
Coca-Cola, I spilt a whole glass of Coke over a keyboard at work once.
Oh.
Broken.
Didn't like it.
No, too sugary
too
for crows.
Too sugary for crows and keyboards.
Mm.
It's just for you and your dog.
Yeah. So this is handy, isn't it, this advice?
Yeah, this is good advice.
This is good advice.
You're fine with wee-wee, you're fine with water.
Yes.
But avoid seawater and sugary drink pop.
Yeah, when it comes to dunking electronic devices into liquid.
And pop. And actual pop as well.
Great, good.
That's informative.
Good, good, good.
But the feeling when the Trinitron came back, because I sort of forlornly sort of switched it on the next day, you know, going up to the corpse of my beloved best friend who had departed the day before.
Did you clean the phone?
Oh, with the phone.
I mean, you might have wanted to wash it with fresh water.
No, I wiped it. You know, I shook it off. I mean, I have to.
Is it still a little bit stinky? The phone.
It reeks.
That must be fun to make and receive calls on.
And the guy that speaks phone. With the phone that rings.
That was the end of the so-called highlights from this week's Six Music Radio Show. Now there's just a little time left for one final linky from the two baboon men that you call Adam and Joe.
There we go, listeners. That's it for this week's podcast. Oh, I've got a mint in my mouth. It's making my mouth sound weird.
Just a mint.
Just a mint.
What's it doing to your voice?
It's making my teeth go all crunchy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you seen Anne Robinson on television lately?
This is just a tangent. Robinson and her wonky face.
I'm sure she's a good, 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 lovely person. And she's a very important member of the castle. I'm sure she's a very good lover. She's very tanned and young, which is sexy.
She's bendy.
But she's the way she. Oh, I'm going to get rid of this mint.
Are you? Can I have it?
No. I mean, later. The way she speaks is extraordinary.
With her teeth together.
Her teeth are totally glued together all the time.
Yeah.
And it's really, really unusual. We were talking the other week about singers like the Kings of Leon guy who have a unique vocal style. Mm. Robinson is rocking that in the world of telly. She's got a really, really unusual voice.
Mm-hmm.
To the degree that in public you'd think she was a bit mad.
Well, she's had her face... improved by scientists,
fixed up.
I wonder if she would do anything to her voice, or do you think by this time she quite likes it? Like, do
you think
best...
it's also taught that she can't actually?
Yes, that's right.
Move the move like anymore. Nicole Kidman's forehead,
and also there's a huge amount of disdain as well that she's battling
that's her
with.
Trademark, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes, she's dripping with disdain, and the disdain gets all over your vocal cords.
She's on watchdog now.
Yeah,
the castle is applying her disdain to wrongdoing companies.
I'm amazed that she was not already associated with. She's a natural fit for.
Well, she's been on it for a while,
in a way.
But they've changed the format; it's got a bit looser and more magazine-y.
In
so
a way,
she's more relaxed.
It's a good nickname for her as well.
Watchdog.
It's not nice. Is
it's
it?
Not very nice at all.
Come on,
come on.
But she dishes it out, so my theory is that she can take it.
Yeah. What do you think happens when she's very tired and wants to yawn? Can you yawn without passing your teeth? I'm doing as much noise as I can without opening the teeth. What if she's hurt? What if she catches her finger in a door? She can't part. How does she eat? Through a tube. One of the teeth is hinged.
She just drinks soup and stuff.
Through a straw,
she just
through
drinks
the hinged
Nutri drinks.
Really?
Are we bullying Anne Robinson now?
No, we're just making observations.
Okay.
Speculations. Is that bullying?
Informed
workplace
speculations.
Bullying.
Yeah, that is bullying. So
Thanks for letting me know.
Stop it and issue an apology henceforth at once.
But I'm genuinely concerned.
Are you?
Yeah, because her teeth simply aren't opening and I want to know for her own good how she is eating.
Well, you must make it your business to find her and pry them apart.
I shall. And I shall not be using my hands for the task.
What the heck will you use?
A lolly stick.
Okay, just check.
Like a dentist.
I did my Ricky Gervais laugh there. Sorry
you
about
did.
That.
Maybe we'll go to number one in the series chart.
I'm trying to get myself at number one again. All right, thanks for listening, listeners.
We'll see you next week.
Yeah, we love you. Keep your emails and texts coming. No, not texts, just emails. On Retro Text the Nation, I started talking like this when I was wrapping up, and now I have to carry on. I love you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
BBC Six Music Podcasts. If you liked Adam and Joe, why not try Jarvis Cocker's Six Music Show, Sundays from 4. Six Music.
Go crazy with it now. That is too crazy, pull it back. The rest of the guys in the band have noticed you have too much funky in your fingers.
Schweinhund!
So you're out of the power plant.
Nein!
Adam and Joe
on Six Music.